As a business owner, it's important to keep your business connected. Spectrum Business is committed to keeping your business online whenever and wherever you need us, all backed by the Spectrum Commitment. Get fast, reliable internet starting at $40 per month when bundled, or level up your internet speed and get a 3-year price guarantee. Learn how Spectrum Business can help your business stay connected at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Every morning brings a fresh new energy.
This is Today.
And no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
When things are tough, we talk about it. When there's something to figure out, we dig into it. And when there's joy, we celebrate it.
Because today is where it's all happening. We get the best start to every morning because we start it together.
Watch the Today Show with Savannah Guthrie and Craig Melvin weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.
Man, I thought we were about to get the rights to WWE music. I thought this was going to be Triple H's The Game song.
You know it's a Spectre deal because in the break, this tells you where Spectre's mind is.
Oh, I got to the bottom of it.
Generic music he wants us to play. And then
I asked him if he likes cheese curds. And he goes, love cheese curds.
Which is an upset.
And he goes, but it has to be with the comeback sauce.
Okay. Well, there it is. Generic cane sauce.
I had no idea what comeback sauce was.
I just looked it up. It's a sauce in the South. It's generic cane sauce. So Spectre loves generic stuff.
That's what I told him. I said, so is it? Because he goes, it's like a Thousand Island dressing. I was like, it is? He goes, well, it's like color. I was like, so it's like canes? He just nodded his head like three times hard. He's like, it's exactly what it is. It's
right,
cane
I'll just
sauce.
Read it to you, description, okay, from Wikipedia. Matt McMullen, glad you came in for this. If you're drafting drafting comeback sauce, is this a first-round pick or not?
No, it's Christian McCaffrey.
Yeah. The sauce is orange to pink and is typically a thick liquid. I'm out.
Sounds kind of gross.
It sounds awful.
Do you curd with sauce? Because you're a huge curd guy.
I love curds. I don't think so. I'm trying to think about my curd experience. I think. Yeah. I don't think they really need anything.
He's marinara, I'm ranch, and Mac is wherever he's been.
Yeah. Marinara would be my choice if I had. Okay. Like,
right, because it's like a mini mozzarella stick when you think about it, right?
Yeah. Makes sense.
You could put ranch on your mozz sticks, but you're probably not. You're probably using tomato sauce, right?
Yeah.
I'm also not a huge ranch guy.
I'm not either. Yeah. Unless it's smokehouse barbecue. The other stuff can kick rocks. Not a ranch fan.
Like, I think it's fine. I don't dislike it, but I don't seek it out, you know?
You're not taking ranch with your first pick of a condiment draft.
I'm not. No,
what are you
I think ranch
with?
Might be a bust.
Yeah.
I'm a honey mustard guy.
Okay.
Yeah.
Like what
honey
kind?
Mustard.
Is
or
there
buffalo
a certain
sauce.
Brand?
No, I'll take whatever. Yeah.
That is the voice of Matt McMullen here, the Kansas City Chiefs.
That's why
and
I came in.
NFL draft coverage is here, brought to you by Powell Exteriors, JMM Displays, and Salvation Army. Let's get to it. Ready to get this thing going Thursday night, 7:00. Started off for a new season?
Yeah, I'm fired up. You know, I really enjoy the whole draft process and learning about all the prospects and doing mock drafts and all that, but I was just talking to Mac about it on the way up. I'm ready to talk about, like, real things, you know, like players that we've actually taken and looking forward to next year. This whole thing's a lot of fun, but the actual draft itself and finding out who's going to be on the team is what I enjoy the most.
You can answer however you want, and I am going to put you on the spot here. Are
awesome.
You kind of tipped off as to where they want to go because you work for the team, so you kind of have an idea when you give your stuff out? Because I'm trying to direct people to your website. If you don't know the Chiefs are taking, Matt really knows the answer to these questions, right?
So I'm in the dark just like everybody else, which I think is a good thing because I can have fun with it and really try to evaluate it the way that I want to. I do think it's funny sometimes when I put out like videos or articles on players and people are like, this is a smoke screen. I'm like, no, this is just me talking.
Yeah.
This is, and Mitch and I joke around about that in our podcast. Like, this is just us talking, you know, but I have no clue what they're going to do. I've educated guesses just like everyone else does, but I find out who we're taking when everyone else does.
Yeah, because I think a lot of people do go to you guys for that information. And if you're putting it out there, they're like, all right, the team's saying this. They must know something. And you've had a lot of defensive linemen on there
who
lately.
Is the draft, man? I got money on.
You've had a lot of defensive linemen featured recently. Yeah. That seems to be the spot where everybody's looking at in the, like, that seems to be the deepest position, I guess.
I think so. Yeah. I think the defensive line is the deepest part of this draft for sure. Specifically, probably the edge rushers. But I think what's funny, when you look at the draft, a lot of it's in the context of the first round, like who are the Chiefs taking in the first round. And when you talk about where the depth of the draft is, maybe that's not the direction that you go, because the draft is deep and you can find those guys later on. That's for Brett Veach and his crew to decide. But I think the Chiefs are in a great spot where I think maybe this year, more than any recent year, they can really go best player available because of how they handled free agency. And, you know, you just don't want to go in the draft saying, hey, we have to do this. And if you don't sign Jalen Moore, maybe you go into the draft saying, man, we got to take a tackle in the first round.
And then you screw yourself.
And then you maybe you reach for a guy that you, if there's a run on tackles or whatever happens. Like, I think the Chiefs are in a great spot where no matter what happens during the first round, they can take just the best player on their board at 31. If they want to move up, they can. If they want to move back, they can. They're really flexible, and that's the perfect spot to be in.
So when we look at this draft, I asked to mention this yesterday about, like, is it kind of an arrogant approach when you look at this team? You saw what they did in the offseason. They bring back Kareem. They sign Hollywood Brown. They bring back Juju. They're essentially just bringing back what was last year's product, which, again, great product. You got to the Super Bowl. You went 15-2. This year's draft, you know, we talk about defensive linemen because Chris Jones is slowly but surely aging out, right? You talk about offensive linemen because you're not really sure, even though Andy said yesterday it's going to be Kingsley and Caliendo are going to battle at left guard. You look at left tackle, Moore was signed in the offseason. Is this another draft where, like, every pick is set up for 2026, 27, and 28?
Well, I think every draft is probably like that, where you're always trying to look ahead, which is a good thing. I mean, if you're only trying to fill holes in the short term, I think that's probably an issue. But when you're always looking forward to, you know, players are inevitably going to get older and more expensive as you go, you have to keep reloading. That was the beauty of the 2022 class, is you were able to get so many young players who were able to come in and make an impact right away. And I mean, did the Chiefs win two Super Bowls and go to three in a row without that 2022 draft class? No, they don't. I mean, that's the reality of it. It's difficult to hit like that. I mean, to find so many contributors throughout. But as much as I love round one, it's about trying to find guys on day two and day three that maybe they don't come in and they're not starters right away. But in 2 years, we look back on this draft and say, could we have won the Super Bowl without those guys from the 2025 draft class? You know, and that's what I get excited about. Who are the guys on day two and three who are going to make an impact?
And you know, I think it was Veach or somebody said that, like, you know, from like pick 20 to 100, there's a lot of really good players in this draft. And I just laugh at all of us because we go, wow, there's nobody good in this draft, but 20 to 100, my God, we could love like, you just said there was nobody good in this draft. You know, like, it's weird how we kind of contradict ourselves. But you start looking at the picks that Brett's had between 21 and 100. Holy crap. I mean, that's where he's made his money. That's where he's built this team. That's where he's built this organization. He's drafted some really good players in that sweet spot. So that's what gets me excited, because Brett's going to have the opportunity to excel where he excels the most.
And having the 63rd pick and the 66th pick is just awesome, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, it's so hard when you have to say, like, goodbye to a player that everyone loves, like L'Jarius Sneed. But then the way it worked out, where now you have that pick at the top of the third round. Mm-hmm. I mean, what's he going to do with that to get in that sweet spot where we, like you just said, Bob, I really think the secondary wave of players in this draft is where the strength is. I don't think it's a great year to have like a top five pick,
right?
But thankfully we don't. It's a great year to have all these picks in the top 100.
It's an Eric Fisher. It's 2013 all over again, you know?
It kind of is, in a lot of ways. And, you know, Fisher ended up being a great pick for the Chiefs, but when you have the number one overall pick, you hope it's a slam dunk quarterback. And
glad it wasn't, though. I mean, imagine if it was or something and we never had Patrick Mahomes, right?
Oh, yeah. Like, if the Chiefs get Andrew Luck, if things are a little bit different and it doesn't work out, you're right. It's like the butterfly effect with football. But I'm with you. I mean, this is a great year, I think, to have the 31st overall pick and to have all these picks in the top 100. It's got to go out there and execute.
Yeah, and they've done a really good job of being able to execute and find those guys. And a lot of the starters on this team and a lot of the guys we love are picked in the second and third rounds. And also, too, from, like, and I hate to get nerdy on this, but, like, you need those guys to hit from a salary cap standpoint, too. So you basically have free players for a couple of years.
It's so hard not to get nerdy with the draft, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like, you know, you just dig into it. I have Dane Brugler's draft guide in front of me right now, and this is the kind of thing that I'm like, pouring over. I don't know how this guy does it, where he has like 600 different.
Do you have a book the size of Mitch's?
So Austin Woodard makes that for Mitch. Shout out to Austin.
Oh,
Austin's
so you don't
the best.
Get one.
I get to use Mitch's. Okay. Yeah, we're trying to save a few trees, not cut down, create another giant book. But that thing's incredible because it's Chief-centric. Mm-hmm. Austin does an amazing job with that.
He does. He's also the best undertaker in the state of Missouri, too.
The guy has many talents. Yes,
he definitely does.
When you look at this draft, though, and you talk about how it's like, you know, not like any other draft in the past, there's not a huge, like, you know, explosion of names in this draft. I think, you know, we look at the top three picks, we can pretty much essentially say it's going to be Cam Ward, Travis Hunter, and Abdul Carter, right? Yeah. Out of those three names, like, is there a player that you fear where they go? Because Mac and I have kind of been in the conversation of, like, if Jenty goes to the Raiders, all of a sudden they've gotten Pete Carroll. I know Geno Smith is not, you know, ripping the walls off of talent, a quarterback, but he's much better than what they've had. Then you throw in Brock Bowers and Jenty and that sort of up-and-coming team, because we saw what Ladd McConkey did last year for the Chargers and Justin Herbert until the playoffs, and McConkey was still, like, ungodly in the playoff game. But, like, is there a player out there that could go to the Chargers, Raiders, or the Broncos that maybe you're like, okay, hold on, this is a little more scary than we think?
Well, I think Jenty's a stud, but I'd prefer Abdul Carter stay as far away from the AFC West as possible. You know, I was watching Josh Connerly cut-ups the other day, the tackle from Oregon, and he played really well against Carter, but still, just watching Carter move, like, that guy is a beast, and if he can stay in the NFC, I think that would be preferable.
Wow, that was a surprising one for me, because I thought you'd go somebody on the offensive end, or, you know, so, but there's really not that guy out there right now. Like, I feel like, and we've kind of discussed this, Travis Hunter has the biggest bust potential of anybody in this draft.
You know, it's interesting because I'll make like a baseball analogy. I used to think that it was ridiculous to think that Shohei Ohtani could come over and pitch and hit. I'm like, that's just disrespectful. Like, no one's been able to do that since, what, like Babe Ruth. Like, it's not going to happen. And then he turns out to be the best pitcher and hitter in baseball. So I need to see Hunter do it, I guess, if he's going to play both ways. I have doubts that that's possible just because football is such a difficult game and so taxing on your body to play both ways. But he's obviously an incredible athlete. I'm excited to see what he can do. I prefer he do it far away from the AFC West as well. But Hunter's an interesting one. I think it's a really interesting prospect overall. Carter, for me, though, just seems like the most like ready-made. He can come into the NFL and dominate.
Yeah.
Like, just be like that edge guy right away that has 10 sacks his rookie year.
Okay, so everybody's in agreement that Abdul Carter's the best player in this draft. Then why doesn't Tennessee take him at number one overall?
I think it's so tough just with the pressure of trying to find your quarterback, you know? And Cam Ward is so polarizing. I didn't spend a lot of time on quarterbacks this year for obvious reasons, but it's because we have the best quarterback of all time on our team. But I watched Cam Ward during the college football season when he was playing a conference game against Cal, which I think is so funny. It's like 6 hours away from Miami.
That's right.
I mean, he was great. I mean, he's electric. You know, he'll throw the ball across his body. He'll make these crazy running throws. I wonder how that translates to the NFL. And some guys, it works, obviously, with guys like Patrick Mahomes. Other guys, it doesn't. You need the right infrastructure in place. I mean, honestly, I'm rooting for him because I'm rooting for Mike Borgonzi, and I want him to succeed and do well in Tennessee. But, you know, with Cam Ward, you trust your evaluators, and we'll find out what Tennessee thinks of him. I mean, he could be great. It's just, I just don't think we know.
All right, we have two questions for you on the other side. One's from the text line. One is from the random minds.
Okay.
The other three
can't wait
in this room. So we're talking to Matt McMullen of the Kansas City Chiefs about the NFL draft. We'll continue this on the other side of 96.5 The Fan, your home for Kansas City sports.
Let's go and Dusty. Subscribe and watch the show on YouTube by going to our channel at The Fan 96.5, Kansas City's FM sports station. 96.5 The Fan.
The text line's more upset with the cheese curd conversation or the fact that we play generic music. Please tell Smack he can get these generic blanks if y'all keep playing this generic bump music.
This is a lot for 9:20 in the morning.
Hey,
isn't
man,
it?
You know,
head bobbing.
We're getting it going, bro.
Why are people mad at the cheese curd conversation?
Oh, there's only one. Cheese curds are disgusting. There's nothing worse than eating the substance basically known as fried cottage cheese, because cottage cheese is disgusting. I don't know if that's an attack on my soul, because I think cottage cheese is like on the Mount Rushmore of sides. Hot take. But give me a Frito scoop and a bowl of cottage cheese, you'll never see me again. It looked like I got rabies by the time I'm done. But that laugh you hear is Matt McMullen of the Kansas City Chiefs, and our draft coverage with him is brought to you by Powell Exteriors, J&M Displays, and Salvation Army.
How could you not like fried cheese, man? Like,
Just donuts are just fried dough, and nobody eats regular dough.
I mean, I don't eat the stuff on the regular, but cheese curds are good. Everybody knows that.
Go to Hy-Vee and get a donut these days.
Oh, their donuts at Hy-Vee are unbelievable, man. Holy cow.
Need an EpiPen by the end of the day. So here's a question from the text line from the 816. I'm going to bring them to life for you. Ask Matt what teams drafting before the Chiefs affect the Chiefs the most. What to watch, basically.
Well, I think just like any year, Buffalo and Baltimore are teams to watch because those are the teams that the Chiefs are competing with to go to the Super Bowl, right? So Buffalo picking at 30 is interesting because it's right before us, and then Baltimore at 27. I think Buffalo particularly because Buffalo in a lot of ways has a lot of the same needs, I guess you would say, that the Chiefs might have. They might want to address their defensive line, might want to add an edge rusher, might want to add a receiver or a corner, stuff like that. But while I think those teams, like what they do is interesting and we'll watch it, I also think because the Chiefs are in this position where they can go best player available, whatever run happens in the first round, I'm fine with. Like I look back to a couple years ago where I really hoped the Chiefs could find a receiver and you got to pick number 19 and no receivers have been taken. This is 2 years ago, I think. And then four receivers went in a row and the top four receivers are off the board just like that. And that's frustrating if you're kind of hoping you get a certain position. But in this draft, like no matter what run happens or what the Bills do or the Ravens do, a really good player is going to be available at 31. And maybe it's not a position that we're all thinking about, but if it's the best player on the Chiefs board, and like they've done where they've set themselves up where they can take that best player available, just do that, and I think it'll be better because of it.
So when you look at, you know, Baltimore and the Ravens in this kind of category, do you think the Baltimore Ravens or the Buffalo Bills, I should say, would be willing to trade with the Chiefs? Those seem like your only true trading partners that are kind of left. You know, Baltimore gets your Orlando Brown. Buffalo trades with the Chiefs. Nobody else answers the phone calls and whatnot. Like, are those two possible teams to maybe make a trade with?
I mean, who knows?
Could you imagine if Buffalo does it again?
I wouldn't think Buffalo would do it because Buffalo being just one pick ahead of you.
Yeah.
I'd be surprised if they did. I really think that, you know, Brett Veach has said that the Chiefs have between like 12 and 14 players that they have first round grades on that they'd be willing to move up for. And in my mind, like those early 20s would be the spot where if there's one of those guys that falls, you try to make a move up there with, I don't know, Pittsburgh. The Chargers, I don't know if the Chargers would trade with the Chiefs, but maybe Green Bay.
Do you think Pittsburgh would take Minshew for 21?
I think Minshew is the Chiefs' backup quarterback, and you're not going to take this preseason experience away from me when I'm on the sideline enjoying the Minshew mania.
Where Mitch has that draft book, McMullen's got that Minshew question
book. I need it.
The fact is, you're not taking this away from me.
I need the Minshew mania in the preseason.
Will they let you show up to training camp like with his short style and like a mustache? Right? Like,
I mean, I'm sure they'd let me. Does the world want that?
Yes,
I don't know.
Yes, dude. Matt McMinshew.
Sure you and Mitch should try to dress like Minshew on the first day of camp and see who pulls it off better.
Oh, Mitch could pull it off for sure.
I know he could. That's what I'm saying.
He shows up with a mullet and like the mustache and all that.
And
I
Mitch
could definitely
would have
see
no
it.
Problem getting into Minshew mode.
No, he would not.
Right? You guys just do all your shows from an RV.
Maybe we should. Just switch things up a little
Change things up a little bit. Have a little bit of fun now, right? So, okay, but the run you mentioned too.
Yeah.
I feel like, and I could be wrong about this, I feel like that's the running back position this year. I know the defensive line position is loaded, but I feel like that running back position is where we start to see the run because we haven't in years.
Could be interesting, like Amarion Hampton from North Carolina. He's a player that I think kind of gets compared to Zeke Elliott quite a bit. Ooh. And he's that player that maybe could go in the first round, could go in the second round. But you're right, like someone surprises you and takes him at 21 or something. Then does someone else go in the first round? I don't know. I think that'd be a benefit for the Chiefs. I think this running back class is really deep, and you could find a player who's a contributor like in the fourth or fifth round at running back. So if teams want to take a bunch of running backs in the first round, that's great. And maybe the Chiefs will do it. I don't know if a guy falls, but if there's a run on running back, I think that'd be a good thing for us.
I agree. It just feels like the sexy position this year. Like everybody's getting all lathered up for running backs.
Well, I think it's just a reactionary thing where it went one way where everyone said running backs were replaceable. And then you have a couple running backs just light the league on fire, like Saquon. And now it's like the exciting thing again. Mm-hmm. The reality is it's probably somewhere in the middle. Like most things, you can find a really good running back. He's going to help your team. Right. I don't think they're just like replaceable. Like some people seem to think they are. If you have a really talented running back, your team is better. But at the same time, you don't reach for one. And the Chiefs don't necessarily need one. Like the Chiefs backfield, if they had to play today, would be, I think, a pretty good backfield. But there are so many good running backs in this class that if one falls to you at some point, no reason not to do it.
Right. I think it's like the evolution that we always see at the NFL. Like it's, you know, quarterbacks are always going to reign supreme. But then wide receivers started to come out of nowhere because the offense expanded. Players got more talented. And then we went from just like outside alphas to like slot guys getting drafted, like Devonta Smith and like Xavier Worthy type players are like game changers. Running back, same way. Like it used to just be like, hey, here's a handoff, run through the tackles or run through the guards and, you know, average 4 yards a carry. That's running backs in football. And then the other thing that happens is all of a sudden running backs start to tear or fade away from the NFL, and all of a sudden we have gadget running backs like a Jahmyr Gibbs, a Bijan Robinson, a Saquon Barkley, guys like that. So it's all of a sudden I think we fall into the prism of like, I want that. Well, that doesn't exist for everybody. Like Detroit, for example, Montgomery and Gibbs. Everyone's like, I want that. Well, that's 1 in 32. You know,
yeah, like
that's
what they tried to do with Mahomes for a while, too. Everybody kind of wanted their Mahomes, you know?
Which is impossible to find because there's only one Mahomes. At running back, though, if the Chiefs wanted to find a player who could kind of fill that third down back role, I think that would be what I'd be most excited about. I think Samaje Perine, like kind of the hole that he left, is bigger than people might realize because he helped this team in a bunch of ways. To have that thankless role where you're a great pass protector, you can catch the ball out of the backfield. You run the ball sometimes, but you're not like the main back. You don't get a lot of credit, but you still help the team win. If the Chiefs can find a guy like that, I think that'd be great. And for me, like Trevion Henderson from Ohio State is like perfect in that role. Great pass protector. He's electric with the ball in his hands.
But he's from the Big Ten.
He's from the Big Ten, but I think he can still be a good player. I mean, there's so many good Ohio State players in this draft. I know there's the stuff out there about like how the Chiefs haven't really taken any, but I think it'd be difficult to because there's so many in this draft. But, you know, Henderson's a guy that I saw this on Twitter the other day could end up in the first round, you know? For me, he's more of a day two guy, but really good player.
What about Simmons from Ohio State? I know he's got the banged up knee, but that seems like a pick where you don't need him today, but if you draft him, then you can maybe use him next year. I don't know. What do you think?
Well, that's the most like popular pick out there right now, right?
It is,
and
yeah.
It's because it makes a lot of sense because it's so hard to find like your blue chip left tackle if you're picking up 31 overall because those guys go in the top 10. The consensus here is that he likely would have been, if not the top tackle on the board, maybe the number two tackle on the board at worst, if he hadn't gotten hurt, has that knee injury, maybe he slides and you can get some great value there at the bottom of the first round. He's a really good player. I like him a lot. And if he was the Chiefs pick, I'd be thrilled about it. I have my doubts he's going to make it all the way to 31. And I don't know where he's on the Chiefs board. I don't know if he's a player they move up for, but for me, that would make a lot of sense where if you get a player that maybe isn't going to play right away for you, but he adds depth right away and gives you flexibility later on. Good problem to have if you have multiple players vying for that left tackle spot maybe in 2 years. So I'd be on board with that. But again, if he goes at 22 overall and the Chiefs can't go that direction, I won't be mad about it because another player is going to be on the board because of it.
Well, do you like Jalen Moore that they added in? I feel like people are not remembering or thinking that they added this guy in to play left tackle this year.
Yeah, I do, because on one end, his mentor was one of the greatest left tackles of all time in Trent Williams. And the reason he wasn't on the field is because Trent Williams was there. When Williams got hurt, he had his opportunity last year, went in and played really, really well against good competition, good pass rushes. So I think he has earned this opportunity. He has to go out there and earn it here. He has to earn every opportunity he gets here in Kansas City now, but that begins with OTAs and goes into training camp, and I think he'll have every chance to earn that starting left tackle role. And again, it gives the Chiefs flexibility where they don't have to ask a rookie to come in here and play that spot, because that's just a really difficult thing to do. Jalen Moore is a veteran. He's played a lot of football. He's been around. Hasn't played a lot during the regular season, but when he has, he's gone out there and played well. And again, he was the understudy for one of the greatest to ever do it, so I think that's a pretty good player to bet on.
So this was Mitch's audio yesterday that he was on the show with talking about the future and what Brett Veach thinks of it.
This is something I've always appreciated about Brett Veach, is that he will never look at 25 in and of itself. They look at 25, 26, and 27 all at the same time. So this draft, we got to get back on board. The division's coming after us, right? We all know that. They're sick of losing to us. 9 straight division titles, and here they come. Let's go find who's won a Super Bowl as a coach. Go get him. And then let's, you know, we got to take these guys out. So if people think we're just going to sit there and have them take punches at it, they're wrong. We're going to counterpunch. But you got to look at the 25 counterpunch. But they will never do that at the expense of 26 and 27. And your point, the best point you've made is the fact that there is no exposure anywhere. Nobody can look at the Chiefs and go, well, we can manipulate them into a pick or manipulate them into a trade because they are desperate. No, people can look at us and go, we don't know what they're going to do. Brett Veach has this normal tendency to trade up. He could trade down. He's in a position to do that. Or he could stay at 31 and take, you know, multiplicity of things. It's not like, oh, they got to have, if you're Pittsburgh,
right,
you better figure out quarterback in a hurry. the Chiefs aren't in that position at really any spot. You could argue left tackle, and Jalen Moore's not had a lot of time or a lot of experience, but you at least have, you know, a guy that you have a chance to have some success with. So there's nowhere that you're really exposed.
So I'm convinced they're going defensive tackle after hearing that, especially after hearing Reed yesterday talk about left guard is basically a battle. That's the camp battle this year, I think, that we can all kind of go ahead and write that in pen. Left guard, it's Caliendo, and it's Kingsley. Left tackle sounds like it's Moore. Draft, where are you at the slimmest? I think it's defensive line.
Doesn't Mitch just fire you up in April for Chiefs football? He does. It's just incredible.
He walked in with his Bible of draft and just slammed it on the table, and I was like, we're here.
Like, let's ready to roll. Let's do it.
Yeah.
I think that would make a lot of sense. There's two players that I like a lot, and Derek Harmon from Oregon and Walter Nolan from Ole Miss.
The Derek Harmon one is interesting. I saw somebody mock him to the Chiefs today, and it was one of the 10 players, I think it was Bleacher Report, that did the 10 players that will not be busts in this draft, and he was one of the guys on that list.
I mean, he's a stud. I also have doubts that either of them will be available at 31. Maybe they're a guy the Chiefs can move up for, or maybe they'll slide. I don't know. Like, not all these guys can go in the first round. But to find, like, a Robin for Chris Jones's Batman would be really awesome along the interior of the Chiefs' defensive line. I mean, look at what Philadelphia did last year, right? Mm-hmm. They have all these guys on the defensive front that you can't double everybody. If you can add like a Derek Harmon or a Walter Nolan, who is a prototypical three-tech defensive tackle who can rush the passer, play the run, do it all, do what Chris Jones can do, and you have two of those, like, that's just really, really difficult to protect against. And I mean, Harmon had like 55 pressures last year, led all interior defensive linemen. And then Walter Nolan, you just watch him play, you can see why he's so effective, just powerful and explosive and big and strong. So if either of those are there at 31, that'd be a great option too. I mean, it's going to be one of those things where we're going to talk about all these players and either they're all going to be gone or a bunch will all be available at 31 and they'll take someone else.
And they'll take somebody you're not even thinking about. Right? That's why I always keep saying I finish every draft sentence and they draft a cornerback or a kicker or something you're not even thinking of at this point in time, because that's what they always do. I mean, you go back to when these guys first got here, and I think it was after the pick of the left tackle, Eric Fisher. I think it was the following year they took Dee Ford, if I'm not mistaken. Everybody goes, you've got Tomba, you got Justin Houston, why are you taking? Well, they knew those guys were going to kind of age themselves out. And to kind of piggyback on Mitch's comment there, that's what they've always done since they got here. That's kind of been the Andy Reid MO. It may be 2014, but we're drafting for 15, 16, and 17. And so that's why now I always look, hey, who's going to be aging out? Who's not going to be under contract? And then you start to see those positions, you know, get drafted. You're like, okay, that guy's not going to be here anymore. This guy's not. And I feel like Chris Jones kind of fits that category, being 31 years old, kind of, you know, coming up on father time, tight end, obviously, or one of those positions that they've drafted ahead of time. I just feel like defensive tackle fits that mold to a T this year.
Well, it's funny because I'm remembering back to when I was on with you guys 2 years ago, talking about the Chamari Connor pick and how that could impact the future. And now, I mean, Chamari essentially replaced L'Jarius Sneed last year in the slot, and also is now going to be, with Justin Reed gone, going to have a chance to play some more traditional safety, I think. Like, you're relying on a player like that to help fill a void. And you're always looking toward the future. I think Mitch is 100% correct in that. Think about the last several years. You take Jaden Hicks in the draft so you can be ready for not maybe having a player like Justin Reed. You take Trent McDuffie years ago, knowing L'Jarius Sneed wouldn't be here forever. That's what good teams do. You're always looking toward the future. And it's so easy to want, like, the instant gratification. And I look back to the Tyreek Hill trade. I mean, I think for everyone, that was a bummer, right? Like, Tyreek's one of the greatest players in NFL history, and he's on your team, and you trade him away. But it gives you an opportunity to extend your window even further. Mm-hmm. And those are difficult things to do, but Brett Veach is so good at that, about always thinking about, hey, I want to win this year, but I also want to win next year and the year after that and the year after that. And sustaining success in the NFL is the hardest thing to do, and the Chiefs have been the best at it over the last decade. Look at it. I mean, no one has all the winning seasons in a row that the Chiefs have. No one has going to the playoffs every year like the Chiefs have in the last decade. And it's because of Brett Veach always looking toward the future and saying, I want to be good right now, but we also have to be good in 2030. How do we do both?
And it takes a lot of stones to make moves like that. You talk about running back earlier. This was Mitch on, like, when you could get a running back.
I think looking at this draft, you can also get that at 66 or 95.
Okay.
And that's where I think a possible trade down could happen. Is, and you got to find a trade partner and somebody willing to, hey, we need to go to 31 to go get somebody, but then you pick up a fourth or fifth that you don't, or fifth you don't have, or a fourth, and I think you can find that same guy.
So I was hell-bent that they would take a running back with that first pick in the third round, which is, I think, the second overall pick in the third round from the Titans. For
66?
Yeah. That's where I thought they'd take running back. It seems like maybe you can wait a little bit longer and address other needs before that, like around the fourth or fifth, or maybe you trade back and get, I don't know what you would think about that. Like, is that an egregious statement to think you take a running back that early?
No, I don't think so. I think it's a matter of how the board falls and which running backs do they have ranked really highly. But Brett said that he thinks there could be a starting running back taken in the first round and a starting running back taken in the fifth round. And it's a matter of how other things are stacking up. Like, I think if you get to 66 and you have a bunch of great running backs on the board that you like, but you also have some other players ranked higher above them, I don't think you reach a running back just because you really want one, because you can likely find one later on. So, I mean, there's a lot of good players. I mean, you can, there's a guy I like a lot from SMU, Rashad Smith. Have you guys watched him at all?
No.
He like reminds me of Jerick McKinnon. He's a former receiver. That
is
plays
that what you're
back.
Looking at in running backs right now? The Jerick McKinnon replacement type guy, the Samaje Perine replacement type of running back?
Me personally, yeah. Okay. And I know, you know, there's nothing wrong with finding like a bell cow, the guy that's going to carry the ball, you know, 200 times a year. Like, that player would be great too. But for me personally, I would love the third down guy because I think that fits Coach Reed's offense. I think it kind of fits what the Chiefs could use right now. And those players exist in this draft. I'd be happy with whoever they take, but I think that would make a lot of sense for me. Can you catch the football out of the backfield? Can you make guys miss? Can you pass protect? Which is obviously a really important part of it too.
Yeah, so tell me more about that kid from SMU that you like.
Well, I just like him because he's a former receiver that can catch the ball. He attacks the ball like a receiver. He can run routes. Still kind of a work in progress in pass protection because he is a former receiver, but also you can get him probably in the fourth or fifth round.
And now, that's also what St. Joe's for.
You'll
learn how to pass block.
You work on
St.
that
Joe.
Stuff, you know? So, and I think he's a player that could fit in and help the team right away. And I'm looking at Dane Brugler's draft guide. He's the 18th running back on the board. All right. So think about that. Like, an 18th running back on the board that he thinks is going to be taken in the fourth or fifth round gives you an idea of how many good running backs are in this draft.
No doubt.
Typically, there's maybe like 10, but to think there's like 20 guys maybe at running back who can make an impact, like Jaden Blue from Texas is a really good player. He's 21 in Brugler's draft guide in terms of running backs going in the fifth round. So I would love if the Chiefs took a running back in the top three rounds. That'd be awesome. I get really fired up about it, and they might. But at the same time, I'm just trying to say there's a lot of players who are going to be available later who are talented that in other drafts might have gone higher, but they're going later because there's so many running backs in this class. And also, like we were talking about earlier, I think taking a running back is an exciting thing, and teams are excited about that. And because of it, you might see a lot more off the board.
The pass protection for a running back is key, especially in this town. Like, if a running back misses a pass block, 76,000 fans know it, because we've been so set up to have our running backs be these great, you know, pass blockers. So the guy who is going to be that guy, that protector as a running back, he better have his S together, because he ain't going to get any sympathy from this group, you know?
I'd show you one clip. It's that game the Chiefs won against the Chargers at home last year, where Mahomes led a game-winning drive. But Derwin James is coming down at 100 miles an hour, open hole at Mahomes. And the only guy between James and Mahomes was Samaje Perine, and Perine won.
Yep.
He won, just stonewalled James. Pat completed the throw. Chiefs won the game. Those are things that are kind of forgotten if you're just following the ball, but you got to have players like that to help you win games.
Speaking of excitement, last one for you here.
Okay.
Outside of the Chiefs, I'm sure you're an NFL guru as well. Like, outside of Kansas City, what's the most exciting storyline you're excited for in this draft?
Exciting storyline. You know, I'm always curious to see how the quarterbacks end up and how they might change franchises. Look at last year with Jaden Daniels, like, completely changed the Commanders. So with Ward and with Sanders, I'm just curious, and maybe even Jackson Dart, I don't know. Are we looking at one of these teams that takes those guys next year completely differently? And maybe we will. I mean, that's the fun part about the NFL, is like, these things can change like in an instant.
You look at Bo Nix too.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, the Broncos go from having a quarterback competition every year to now, I mean, they have legitimate playoff aspirations. So for me, it's just, where do those guys end up and do they succeed? And are their teams patient with them? You know, because sometimes it takes a while, like with Bryce Young in Carolina, it's taken a while. Like, you see some flashes, but they haven't had a lot of success as a team. But like with Jaden Daniels, like, he goes to Washington, they're an immediate, like, electric offense, and they're must-see TV, right? So I'm curious just with, and this is a kind of an obvious answer, right? But I'm just curious with, like, Cam Ward, if he goes to Tennessee, or Sanders, wherever he goes, are they going to change these franchises? And if not, how do those franchises react to it?
Well, it's interesting because you've got guys like Jaden Daniels and CJ Stroud and Patrick Mahomes that hit the ground running. And then you have other quarterbacks where it takes a little bit longer. And we view them as busts because they didn't hit the ground running.
Right away.
You know? Right away. Right away.
And for Mahomes, I always, he'll say this. I mean, this is, everyone knows it, but like he credits sitting for a year to all his success, right? And some guys, they come in right away and they're great. Some guys come in and they struggle early on. Not a lot had the luxury of sitting all year and having like an established veteran ahead of them. I think that helped Patrick immeasurably. But these guys, I'm assuming, with like Ward and Sanders and Jackson Dart and whoever else, they're going to have to go in there and play day one. And how do they handle that?
Yeah, find out. It's just, it's so hard for quarterbacks to come into this league and do what Patrick Mahomes did because the system isn't there. I hear these people talk about they want to do the Kansas City thing all the time, the Kansas City model. You don't have Andy Reid and you don't have Alex Smith. Good luck.
Well, it's just about impossible to replicate.
Yeah.
It really is. I mean, it's so hard. You look around the league, teams tried to do it. You bring in like kind of a journeyman starter, but then they get benched in like week three, right? When they throw a couple interceptions and the rookie goes in before he's ready. Like it kind of worked with Drake May last year in New England. I think May showed me some things. I think he's a pretty good player and he kind of got thrown in the fire when they tried resting him for the year. But it doesn't work for everybody. And, you know, these are human beings and it's difficult and it's hard. And these guys are like 21 years old and they have the weight of the world on their shoulders. You just find out like who can handle it and who can't.
No doubt about it. It's Matt McMullen of the Kansas City Chiefs. And for all of our NFL draft insight, especially today, it's brought to you by PAL Exteriors, J&M Displays, and Salvation Army. If you want, you can stick around and hear about On the Come, something we do on this show.
I think I got to run.
Okay, fair enough.